Does Wendy got anything to say? Or is she sleeping?
I'm awake. Nothing to say.
Do you watch Downton Abbey?
I think I may have seen one or two episodes.
Now, there's a fragmented society. There's our point here. You're totally involved with it. There's millions of people very involved with it. But there can be millions of people who don't even know about it, you know? And
right.
Where is the common community? Where's the community between you and Wendy? It's not on that TV level anymore, on the entertainment community like TV was in the 50s and 60s. So,
but it goes in spurts because people will be watching it. Like, you're catching up on season three.
Yeah.
So now
yeah.
the conversation is, shh, don't spoil the plot. Or, like, you know, Breaking Bad was a good one. So then when you find out that someone's going to watch Breaking Bad, you can get all excited with them. And people also binge watch. I mean, it used to be
yeah,
if you
that's
miss.
That's the new thing. That's the new mode of experience, you know. That's why, you know, Netscape sponsored House of Cards.
There's nothing
shows.
Like a good binge watch, Bob. Oh, my God. It's so sad.
And just think about it. We never could have that before. You could never binge
never
watch. Maybe you
that.
Could you go to Blockbuster and get a bunch of movies, you know, in the 80s or 90s or something and watch three or four movies. But now, man, you can watch 20 shows in a weekend. I mean, it's just...
God, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's why no
so
one would go
fun.
To a movie. Why would watching
right.
regular entertainment when you can binge watch? So that's the chip body experience. The chip body makes that
right.
possible. That's a whole new kind
right.
of demand and requirement.
Right.
And so Wendy, so you two are have a bit of community on the chip body because of the ion situation, but there's no community in terms of your TV body consumption or your chemical body consumption or your astral body consumption.
Nope. Payday.
Only payday.
Payday.
The great unifier.
Yep.
Yep.
The great unifier. Okay, so now, so should I go on? To, should I go back to what I wanted to talk to you about for a sec? All right. Anyone who wants to interrupt?
Let me say this. Payday does not save your family. It does not save your community. It saves the sense of a family and the sense of a community and the after image of this or that. That's a payday retrieves. After images.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Go on to your next point.
Okay, so this I've been trying to make this point. Well, actually, I'm going to make one more tangential point, then I'll go back to that. At the beginning, at the very beginning of this, hours and hours ago, you were talking about like how we really don't need to sleep. You know, we just want to...
We want to check into another perception,
right.
another experience.
Right. So that was one of the reasons why I wanted to stay up with you all night tonight, too, was because I really am wanting to experiment with that more.
Yeah.
Like, it's really starting to become clear to me that, you know, that I really don't need to sleep, that if I want to disengage, it's because I want to numb or there's a sensory ratio imbalance that's causing a numbness that feels like sleep or something. I don't know what.
Right.
But
and
I do want to
experiment. You're eternal, and you don't require energy. You're not losing energy, getting tired, and the drops help
right.
you feel that way. Then you don't
right.
need refreshment on the energy level.
Right. And then it's just so, and this is personal, so it's probably boring to everyone, but I'm still going to say it. I've had this experience since I started engaging with you like in April, so it'll be a year coming in April, and I've told you this before, where I'll feel like a part of me dies after I talk to you, and it certainly, you know, killed other people. And then I've also had several periods of time where I've done like really heavy purging after engaging with you for a while, where I'm like cleaning out closets and getting rid of things that I don't need and, you know, whittling down objects. And now this last time, like I didn't call him last week because I was with my husband, but in the time since I talked to you last, like I spent 8 hours just in my kitchen, and I have a small kitchen, moved the stove, moved the counters, took down every jar that I have and washed them and dried them and went out and got all these dried beans that I put in there and curated up my little pantry for myself. I mean, my house is so clean right now. And, like, usually I would be walking around dusting things while I'm talking to you on the phone. There is nothing even to clean. So now, this is kind of like an initiation. I know it might sound really queer, but, like, I have my whole life is completely in order in this very moment, and then I'm staying up with you all night on payday. And I don't know what it's going to usher in, but it's going to be second only to Bob Fest, that I can tell you. Like, I've changed so much even in the last 2 weeks.
Right. Now, I'm thinking, one way to look at this, to clean things up is visual bias. So you're preserving the American meme of visual purity, as you know you're being mutated by Dobstown and Eindem. So you actually declared war on me and said, I'm going to save visual space. I'm going to clean this thing up, and I'm going to get back to visual purity. That could be one way to look at this cleaning mania.
But it's not really visual, though, because there's all kinds of smells, and it's really tactile. It's the smell of the cleaning solutions that I'm using.
Oh, okay.
The feeling of just abundance, and the feeling of like a stocked larder. Like they're just being, I feel so fed. There's just such wholesomeness and such plenty. Like I feel like I could stay for eternity. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, so you're exploring the other senses.
Right.
Smell and that, and kinetic movement, and pressure, and tactility. You found that cleaning is the most economically cheapest way to express that.
Well, and I really feel like I'm curating my life. Like Ion talks about when he was talking about like money with Matthew, and I don't have any money issues per se. I mean, I could use more, but I'm not in lack. But just how when you start to just allow yourself to only say, watch your words and say, money flows freely and easily to me, and just only talk about that with regard to money, how you even notice that your economy changes, that you have more, even though there might not be like a higher dollar amount. Well, I feel that way in every area of my life, not just financially.
Well, that means you're appreciating life more. You're appreciating everything in your environment, you're making it sparkly. And also, you're not going for the visual goal of having visual purity, you're saying. It's not the goal.
No, it's really not that.
It's a process. You're just engaging your senses.
It's being really, I really, really appreciate, like, the maelstrom is, like, I'm in the calm of the eye of the storm. Like, I know that things will, I mean, there'll be contrast and stuff like that. But the feeling that I had a couple weeks ago about complete loss of identity is gone. And I'm not quite sure, Madeline had said, you know, you might not retrieve anything. You might retrieve some stuff. You had talked to me about retrieving the 20-year-old college girl who was doing all this reading. But, like, I feel like I can be really okay with
nothing.
Not putting
on
anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-uh. You don't need that. What you lose, you don't need to replace. You're accepting the
answer. And then I can just put on whatever I want for a brief time and take it off and not be attached to it. So really let a lot of different things. I don't know if any of that makes sense, but I like this place better than feeling like I've.
So what's your, now the, you're going to influence yourself. Now yourself is your husband, and that's who you're changing also.
Okay,
because he sees himself in you. So then when you change, he's changed. So what? How is he registering this tumultuous
energy? He thinks it's really sweet. He feels like now the house is like even like safer and more cuddly, like more hearty.
Yeah.
Like he's away and he's having a wonderful time with his friends, I'm sure. But I keep getting texts from him that says, I miss you. I miss the animals. I miss my bed. I miss our coffee. I miss, you know, just like the simple, I mean, chemical body stuff.
I hope he's telling the truth. I hope he's telling the truth. He could be covering his ass.
Of course he is. No. Or is he telling the truth? You're terrible.
You sound like Sarah. Okay. You sound like Gummo right there. You went into Gummo tone.
What was that, Gummo tone?
Oh, no, not that. No.
Not that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so back to this Jesus thing again. What I was going to ask you is, like, what do you think McLuhan thought of Jesus as being like an evolutionary older brother, someone that was showing us what was possible for us to do, for us to mutate into, supernatural only son of God?
I didn't get your question. What did I think of what?
Like, what did McLuhan had to say? I mean, he clearly thought that Jesus was like a supernatural being.
Yes.
It came here and penetrated the global theater. What do you think he thought about that? Not just in, like, I don't want you to hear me, I don't want you to tell me that he was teaching us how to, like, navigate around all the media. Like, what did he think of God from a supernatural...
He was trying to show people they weren't understanding what they thought they believed in. I mean, here he is arguing over saying people don't understand what Jesus is. Do you go into a church and say, see these people praying and tell them, you guys don't know what you're praying to. You know, you actually are very inadequate in what you're praying to. I mean, it's very gutsy what he's doing. I mean, he's an outsider, a radical anarchist poet would do that. But no, Marshall's a guy going to Mass every day. And in the church process, and he's criticizing everybody for not getting it. So I think that the idea of Jesus was the supreme being was him coming up with metaphors to trying to make the ordinary and what people thought was cliche, make it an archetype, make it have some new intensity. So he's constantly redefining what people thought was a given and telling them they don't understand the magnitude of Jesus. Or, remember, he's saying Jesus is not a human. He's the ultimate extension of man. That means he's the ultimate metaphor. The metaphor.
Wendy was going to say something. Wendy, were you going to say something?
Beg your pardon?
I heard another female voice. I don't know if it was Sarah or Wendy. Oh,
I didn't hear it.
Oh. Well, maybe it was a ghost. Okay, well, then there's a couple times where Marshall mentions in this book, too, the prince of this world. The prince of this world is a master public relations person. He's a master electrician. He's a master engineer. So, like, I was thinking that he was talking about...
No, he's talking about Lucifer.
That's what I was going to say. Lucifer!
No, prince of the air is a line in the Bible, meaning Lucifer. So he's talking now. He says he's a master of light. And, you know, Einstein talked about Lucifer and light, but the electric light, the electric environment is numbing people, doing something as a disservice. He's speaking as a Christian. And Lucifer is an electric engineer sitting right there running the TV show, running the Downton Abbey, and hypnotizing you. That's what he's trying to point out 40 years ago.
But it's like a Faustian Lucifer, though.
Yes.
Right, a
Lucifer that's here, hanging out with people. It's
working.
What Sheila wanted to have as a boyfriend.
Right.
But the
it's the Holmes.
Yeah,
the dandy.
Yes, the Da Vinci Holmes archetype, the sleuth, the detective, the artist, the rebel, the socially maladjusted. The guy trying to upset you. See, McLuhan was fully aware that he was in pagan culture. He was Luciferian. He was Luciferian. He was trying to upset people. And he recognized that the pagan culture could only respond to that. But he wasn't limited to being a pagan. He said, if I must live with these people, I'm going to do my hellest to, you know, do my utmost to be a Holmes or Da Vinci character. That's why he had himself photographed with the Holmes costume on.
Do you really think that he limited it to make the most of the role I've been given?
Well, that was something he did as a hobby. He considered his hobby, his actual life. He says, I'm not interested in happiness. I'm interested in suffering. I explore pain and suffering. Says, I don't give one iota for happiness. See, so he's being an anti-environment to the hedonistic pagan culture that everybody must have their happiness, right? Their rights. That started in the 60s. So here he is being an antidote. And someone could say, well, usually people would say, well, this guy's an idiot, you know. He's not following his path to joy. He's following his path to pain. But you have to look at McLuhan's strategies and why he's saying that.
have you looked into teenage pop culture, like cliques in high schools lately?
There's cliques.
The cliques, the gangs in the high school, the groups.
What's the latest?
Well, they're just, every single one is a different version of sadness. Like, there's the emos who are expressing themselves poetically and metaphorically, and then there's the goths who are just overtly not saying anything, in your face with not saying anything.
Yeah.
And it's all divided from there. Like, those are the main, are the cliches.
That's why they say we live in a dark time. And so what you have in the TV landscape, there's all this, since nobody is allowed to panic millions of people, there has to be a cheerful today morning show atmosphere.
Right.
So everybody becomes an anti-environment to that. So all the kids, thinking there is a public space that is being shown in a cleaned up, squeaky, optimistic, Pollyannic idea, they don't know that's not there. But they react as young chemical bodies to that, and they put on a dark anti-environmental image. That's why the strategy of being an anti-environment that Lewis began as an artist and McLuhan developed is now rampant in the population. As McLuhan would say, every person is formed to become the outside Holmes, Da Vinci character in this digital android meme situation, because the android meme wiped out all social life and all chemical body life. So it's natural for a young kid to put on a dark anti-environment. And so they're just being like kids would be in the 40s, the Mickey Rooney kid. They'd go to the local Christian club or something. This negativity is their fallback that there's still something to do.
That's what I mean. It's a speech impediment to them. It's a communication impediment that impedes on my nostalgic emotion. And so, like, between me and Noah specifically, I'm saying. So then what I've found out in trying to figure out ways to communicate with Noah, who is overtly rude and just hateful.
A kind of stable autism.
But he knows exactly what he's doing, but he also doesn't care, and he also loves it at the same time. And I don't know. Anyway, if he's being recorded, if he knows that he's being monitored, totally different person. And I found out that goes down into, no, I don't want to say down into, okay, across the spectrum into the we don't know what to do kind of hands-off autism, too. Like, people, if you put a camera on them and give them metaphors, that's how the quickest way to break the communication barrier.
Yeah.
So what is that? Is that because
they want to be acknowledged for their other bodies? They don't know that's the situation, but they don't want you interfering with their chemical body. They're saying that is totally irrelevant to worry about what my chemical body's doing. I'm involved with the digital bodies, and you got to start noticing that somehow. You got to notice what I am. And way more. See, it's like McLuhan was saying, Jesus was supernatural, powerful being. There was more than what the world showed you. Well, the kids is an average phenomenon. They're sick of these people going around thinking they're limited to their chemical body. So they actually have that old, what was once a spiritual attitude. There's more than this world. But it's actually a Luciferian hypnosis. And there are other worlds and there are other bodies, but that's not getting free of what you are immediately hypnotized by. They're going into more subtle hypnotisms. And they want you to recognize that there's more to them than any chemical body assessment.
Okay.
So they want their other bodies recognized.
When do you feel like that... so that rippled out from the work that McLuhan did?
Yes, I was influenced... you see, the original reason I went and saw McLuhan in the 50s was he was revealing what the intelligence agencies at the higher levels knew, that the meeting was a message, and they didn't want that out. So McLuhan enhanced what I was trained to operate under, that perception. And then as the decades unraveled, I saw that McLuhan's perceptions weren't adequate anymore, that there was way more complex, especially when you got the Baudrillards and Derrida, who I read tonight, this impossible possible thing I was reading. These guys come along in the 80s and 90s, and they just got a whole bunch of more complex way of verbalizing. So someone had to figure out how to create an anti-environment to that.
What about Rosenfeld?
Beg your pardon?
Rosenfeld?
What about Rosenfeld?
Genesis? I'm just asking. You said they came in and they did that, and I said, well, what about that?
I didn't say Rosenfeld. I didn't mean that.
No, I did. I said... you were giving poor examples, and I said, "Is that?" And I was saying, "Is this a good example, Rosenfeld, the second Genesis?"
I don't know what that is. What's Rosenfeld?
You were talking about how they were releasing slowly. What was going on? Oh, I lost my train.
Yeah, what? You know what is she talking about, Katie? Maybe
sorry, I had you on mute. I don't know what she's talking about, Rosenfeld.
Yeah, so just state what it is that you're referring to. What is the word Rosenfeld referred to?
It's just this book that fell off my bookshelf today. I swear to Bob, it totally happened. And it's there's a page 222. It says, okay, the chapter title is Control of the Brain and Behavior, and it's talking about injectable RNA being released, but he won't live to see it carried out, and they'd like to find better ways to get it.
Is this one of the names you put on the Holy Office list?
No, sir.
I don't recall you saying that. You're saying, you bring it up, you're not telling us what you refer. You just said Rosenfeld.
I've never brought it up before. I just brought it up right now. I just wanted to see if you knew. Or
no, I don't know. I don't know about Rosenfeld. Okay. When did he make this idea?
This is right then, same time, 70. No, wait, not. It's 69. It was published by the writer.
Okay, I want to shake this up a bit. I want to take about a 5-minute break and play you something. This week in session Melting Titanium number 45. Let me check that. Ion said something, and this was in February 2010. And
awesome.
This is before Carolyn gets told about the cancer treatment in April 2010. This is before we do the RNA drops. This is before we know anything about chromosome 14. We've noticed I'm mentioning it, but it has not been made applicable to anything. So here it is. Okay. So we go to... Melting Titanium number 45, February 16th. And I want to play you a part just to put a good spin on the RNA topic that you're bringing up. And I think a little voice of Ion might shake us up from whatever. I don't want to get bogged down too much in doing McLuhan, even though I'm enjoying it. Let's try this. Let me find the part. Where is it? Okay. So this is about 5 minutes or so. Now, just listen to this. This is about Dr. Amy Bishop, who I talked about months ago. Back in 2010, she got in trouble at Huntsville at a college campus where her colleagues were shot at.
Okay,
remember that story?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yes, I remember the story.
Okay, so... I want to play, this was astounding for me to hear Ion say this. And let's see, okay. Okay. I set up this properly.
I feel really sick right now.
What nauseous you mean?
I don't know. Just very, very agitated and irritated about what's going to happen next.
What? Where? On the show or in your life or what?
Oh, yeah. About the what we're about to hear.
Oh, okay.
I've been waiting for
this. There's a part about the conditions around her and her case. Like, she's in jail now for life without parole. She is in jail. Here's this important
thing. She can psychically communicate with who or what? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't know if she can do that. But the point is that I can't play that part. I'm not going to play that part. There's stuff that we are told not to play. But there is a part I can play. And this is more relevant to what we can talk about.
And then I'm listening. I've got you on mute, but if you call to me, it'll just take me a second to unmute you.
Okay, good. All right, this is February 16th.
All right, I'm listening.
Melting Titanium number 45, February 16th, 2010. And got to bring up the sound thing. Just a second. I keep clicking in this talking, hours of talking, I clicked off all the stuff I had up here. And bring it back up. Okay, so there it is. Volume. Right. Okay.
Wait. Should we do an update on Dr. Bishop and what's happening with her case?
Well, you mean with the pipe bomb and the pipe bomb and the engagement from the other interactions with Harvard University where at the wall happened?
Well, I don't know if we can discuss this on public.
Whoops. Sorry.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah, Carol, if you could start asking questions. What did he mean by pipe bomb in Harvard? Carol.
Apparently she's been associated with some other shenanigans elsewhere, and it happens to be at Harvard.
Mm-hmm. But not really. They're laying it out so that will become the validation for the thing that got invented that now she can't get the Nobel Prize of Peace regarding.
What is it in the chip body about the plastic box about the pipe bomb, or is it something else that you're referring to? Something not covered.
Are you asking us? We don't know. We're just telling you. Carolyn brought it up. Carolyn, is it in the plastic box? We don't know.
The pipe bomb.
I didn't hear pipe bomb, but I heard something about there's.
Ion brings up the pipe bomb and says, no, Carol brought up. No, you brought a pipe bomb. What were you referring to, Ion?
She received a pipe bomb, one of these bombs when they were sending bombs with abortion clinics and all that foolishness.
Oh, yeah?
They sent a pipe bomb to her to blow her up.
A long while ago.
Many years ago.
Yeah, so has this been reported? You don't know if it's been reported. It's just a fact.
Well, give it a minute. Well, yeah. We said it now, it will be. Sorry.
Yeah, so why?
Sorry, Lou. You left too early. We was giving you all the good scoops, and now you've jumped ship. So I guess somebody else will get the scoop.
Lou is someone who was listening and gave up.
Lou Dobbs, yeah.
Oh, okay, Lou Dobbs. So what?
We love Lou, by the way.
We do love everybody.
He's a great American. Yeah.
Okay, so you, so she had a pipe bomb. Why do you bring that up?
Because they shipped her a pipe bomb to blow her up.
And why was that done?
Because they didn't want her following through with the technology that she had to create to set all this in place to have a new petri dish where stem cell research, which now has been cranked back up, Mr. Obama's place of being, has all been cranked back up to actually undo the circle of life. And just now, you human creators have figured out that you do indeed have control of it. if you have a bad ticker, they're just going to grow you one.
Right.
It's like picking tomatoes out of the hooey.
That's what they'll do with stem cells.
Yeah. You'll just regrow it outside yourself. Matter of fact, if you like to take a little bit too much libation and you're gonna pickle your liver, they'll just start growing you one, and then when you pickle that liver, they'll just give you a new one. It's great.
Okay, so
one that's resistant to pickling. There you go. Now you're getting somewhere.
Yeah, so the
all in chromosome 14. We've told you and told you and told you and told you, and now you're finally getting to it. So good.
What's in chromosome 14?
The answer to all the meat of the matter of this cloning cycle that allows for organ replacement within the confines of your double helix. But you're going to soon find that there's more to the RNA that affects the double helix than you know. You just scratched the dermis. You ain't got into the epidural side of life.
So the, what were we talking about here? Anyways,
when you start doing the spinal tap, looking for whether it's clear or not, that'll be the essence of the code that will be used.
Yeah, so chromosome 14, is that known in Mrs. Bishop's life?
Yes, it most certainly is.
She knew about that, its usefulness.
Well, she was created, we say she is, she created the new, what's the word, petri dish?
Yeah.
Not correct word, but that's what they're using.
Yeah.
The new petri dish that made that a plausible reality.
Right, and made it that being the study of chromosome 14.
No, that's the way to develop the concept that allows chromosome 14 to be engulfed, pardon the pun.
Well, noticed, you mean, or studied? Well, what do you do once?
A reality, a potential reality. Because up until then, see, the problem is they could clone sheep and they could clone pit and pat and tit and tat. But until you can come to a place where you have a vessel as perfect as the human beingness to hold it, they have transplants, you know, transplants.
Yeah.
Well, if you had something that could hold the things you're transplanting that someone else didn't have to croak in order for you to have access to it, that sort of makes it free range. It'd be free range livers, wouldn't it, Bob?
Yeah. Yeah. So you were talking.
But they can't know where this technology came from, because if they knew where this technology came from, it'd turn out church.
Right.
So they go to the bowels of Alabama, not quite L.A. That's lower Alabama.
Yeah.
The bowels of Alabama to work out the details.
Have to stop it there. Now, bring you guys in. Actually, I didn't mute you, so you're here. Now, when I heard this the other day, I was amazed. What it's saying is that we, Dobstown Einden, will bring in cloning. Do you know why? Either of you, it's only two of you here. Plus Denny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
No, I'm asking the other two if they... I don't expect you to get it, but do you see why we would be the ones to do the cloning?
Well, because you know about...
Yeah, and then what? So now...
No, wait, Sarah. Denny's saying something, because we know about what?
You know about how to expand through chromosome 14 with RNA. Now, what she's done,
Hold it. That's right.
Okay.
We know how to make that interrelationship between RNA and chromosome 14. They don't know that wherever she was down in Alabama. They don't know how to do it. We're the only ones who know how to do it. So we actually have the key to chromosome, to making cloning, and that was said to us, and we had no clue that's what he was saying. We were just interested in what happened to this woman. But we don't know until April, 2 months later, even begin to get initiated about what chromosome 14 can do and how to do it with cancer. So it's just amazing. Here's an example of Ion telling us the most amazing insight we could get. And I was just thinking about this a few months ago. I said, Carol, it looks like we actually the only ones who can be able to do this cloning or something. I had a vague idea, and I didn't know that had been planted in me 4 years ago. And there it is, waiting to be discovered. So this is what we should be amazed at. Yeah, now, Denny, you wanted to say something else about it?
Well, it seems like she created the vehicle. She created the vehicle to place the bucket to keep the liver or the heart in. She created the petri dish. She created the place to put it to grow.
Yeah, and she doesn't know what to put in there. They're calling it stem cell research and this and that, but they don't have what you do with it once it's contained. So that's a very interesting perception. I wanted to say that to you, Sarah Gummo, because you're bringing up this Rosenfeld and a guy who wrote talked about RNA decades ago or something. And Ion does say right here that we're going to discover that RNA is the key to all this stuff compared to the DNA. But I wanted to bring it up to the president. We're the ones with the solution.
Really?
So, yes, that's what's being said here. That's what Ion's saying to Carolyn and I.
Yeah, but Bob, you say a lot of shit to me.
Well, okay, Ion said it. Now, if you don't agree with it, don't believe Ion on that.
Okay,
I can't
okay.
stop that. Ion is saying it, and is saying it to us before we even knew what he was saying. It's only at four years later.
Is the solution to...
We know you can't do cloning. He says you can make the sheep and that and make a couple copies, but you can't make human being real viable organs that can replace your dead organs. Unless you know the key of chromosome 14. Now, he says Amy knows about chromosome 14 in some way, but they don't know what to do with it because nobody has the way to work with it like we do with the RNA drops. So it's just an amazing statement. So I want everybody to be stunned by it.
I'm stunned.
you really are stunned a little bit, aren't you?
I am. I'm stunned.
That this thing about cloning is coming, and, you know, there's labs out there all over the world with big corporate money, billions of dollars, and little Bobby's here with the key to it.
Right.
And we don't know how much they know we have the key to it. And we ain't giving it away at this point. But that's what's remarkable about Ion is a new environment. I mean, if Ion is lying, it's a great, great fucking artistically controlled theatrical lie going on here. Because he's planting things in ahead of time and waiting for us several years to discover what it meant. Because we had to create the RNA drops and then figure out what it was doing. We're still marveling at what RNA drops can mean, what they can do to people.
Tyranny.
Yes. And so now we're... And I go back, and luckily I'm just going through the melting titanium in order, and then I find out what he said 2 months before we began the road to RNA drops. So the average cynic, let's see what they're saying over on the chat line. That's where you have.
May I talk to Sarah a minute?
Yeah, go ahead.
No.
Just that you were thinking of Buckminster Fuller. The thing that he's renowned for is the geodesic dome.
And the Bucky. They named a molecule after him, the Buckyball. Remember that? You know?
Yeah.
The dome,
does that
the
ring a bell?
The dome is considered a failure and not taken seriously. He was given the mainstream recognition for the molecule, the Buckyball. So that's where he's
going to be. I would prefer to see a Chuck Close painting.
A Chuck Close thing. Why would you prefer to see that compared to what?
I don't know. Just when I think about, I really, really know art history. I promise I'm very trivial at it. But
no, wait. Did you just say you really know or you don't know art history?
No, I really do. I feel like I have a pretty good repertoire.
Well, that's one of my last images of New York City. Listen to this.
Mr.
Just before
Fuller.
We came here, listen, you got to stop. We're not interested in your point of view. We're interested in fucking up words to trigger things. And you bring up Chuck Close. One of my last scenes in New York in May 2008, before we came here, is he had a big show at the Museum of Modern Art. And I went there, and there he was, and I talked to him, and he was hanging among the people. It was a premiere, and there he was in a wheelchair. And it was so symbolic. Here's this guy, famous artist in the New York art world, with this great Irv, and where is he? He's in a fucking wheelchair. And I was going to Hawaii. And I said, well, that's why I'm getting the hell out of New York City. You stay here too long, you'll end up in a fucking wheelchair. And I was going to go and discover him something even greater, get him out of his wheelchair. But it's just interesting you bring up him. He is one of my last images of New York success. Anything to say to that, Gummo?
Just that, I don't know. I mean,
I know my art history, too. I'm glad you know him,
you know,
and I'm glad you know of him.
Inserting trigger words, I'm just saying, yeah, I have really good defense mechanisms built up, and I know my trigger words, and Buckminster Fuller is to be avoided, and I can obsolesce them quickly by going straight into a poignal.
Did you want, if we ever got Harold Channer on, would you argue with him about that? Because that's his hero.
I bet it is.
What?
Yes, I would. What? Yes, I would. I said, bet it is.
Yeah, no, he's a Bucky Fuller guy. And he really liked the Zeitgeist movement because they dropped a mention of Bucky Fuller, so they were in as far as he was concerned because they mentioned Bucky. But why, what's one point you have a problem with Bucky Fuller?
I don't remember. I don't remember, and I don't know. I just.
So you'd rather look at a post painting than read
mechanism.
A little Bucky Fuller.
Yeah, it's a coping defense mechanism in the same way that...
What are you trying to defend?
I don't know. I don't remember because I switched too fast into that.
Right. You're being swept along. So back to now. Let's go back to whatever Katie wants to talk about. I just want to get that out there. It's a good shocker, disrupt things, you know, just show... remember, we're here to talk about what Ion's laying on us.
Yeah, we're done talking about McLuhan for the night.
No, Wyndham Lewis. Carry on. There's no rules on that sense. You might be reminded of something McLuhan said by what we just played.
Yeah.
You were headed to the chat rooms, too, before I interrupted you.
321 says, Trina says, I was thinking, how is McLuhan funny? And then Gummo says, hey, sister, Wendy, good to see you. I guess you're talking about Wendy, right, Gummo? And then 321 says, you and I, Bob, can't figure out why people adore the show. Now, I don't know if he's saying I can't figure it out or he can't figure it out. Then he says, I gave up. Oh, he's talking about Down Abbey. I can't. So he doesn't understand. He says that he gave up on the second episode. Well, I don't give up if I don't enjoy it. It's not about that. Switch to studying the effects of it, about it, rather than... If I don't like it, give up on it. It's definitely a phenomenon. I think I've come up with a good explanation why it's popular. It's actually showing McLuhan's point, the medium is the message. And no show has really done that in such a long, drawn-out, episodical thing. And the imagery they come up with is pretty interesting.
It is.
And so it's nostalgia for when people could gauge change. They don't gauge change anymore. They have to accept it because it has nothing to do with humans. It's just being done within the Android meme. So that's a pretty dark situation, probably. And you can read Croker for the darkness of this situation. But what the miracle is that Ion has come through with interesting antidotes to this darkness.
And products.
Yeah.
And food.
That's what the products are, food.
I know, right?
You know, the Remag and the Relight are totally Carolyn's creations. Ion, I don't think, had much input in those. So Ion's the RNA drops. Ion is the Renew and the Realign. But it's interesting, Carolyn invented the Remag.
Right.
You know, the idea of getting a small pico level and put them in directly into your cells. That's what she came up with.
It is such a good way to get the magnesium.
Yeah. So we were saying that, but yeah, so it's, and then to go and listen, we have some projects that we're working on, which are pretty astounding, but to go back and in here, holy shit, we've got the clue to, the key to cloning.
Right.
Wendy says, hey, Sarah, our disembodiment, ungrounding, digital Saturday engagement once again. Love it. And Wendy says, RNA, more to come, so much more, we don't know. Yeah. So, shall we read the code of the herdsman? We should put that into the record.
You want to? Okay.
Yes. I'm going to bring it up here. Maybe we'll take turns reading a paragraph so you don't have to do everything.
Okay. I've got it printed out.
So this is Lewis talking about what one should do before Ion shows up.
Why don't you start?
Yes, I'm just bringing it up here. Code of the Herdsman, Ginkgo Press. So let's see how this is obsolete and yet maybe not, maybe ionic. So his opening statement, and this was done in 1914, I think. I think it's part of Blast magazine, number one, as opposed to Blast number two, which was 1915. Yeah, 1914. He begins... Never maltreat your own intelligence with parables. It is a method of herd hypnotism. So he's saying, you know, parables, what the religious people rely on, what the local church people, right? So he's not interested in metaphors. It is a method of herd hypnotism. Do not send yourself to sleep with the rhythm of the passes that you make. That means flirting with women? Is that what he means there?
That's what you mean.
No.
Well, what's the meaning of passes? That is the old meaning for it.
Making I think passes at somebody. It has to do with time, the rhythm of the passes that you make, like the way you move back and forth in your environment.
Okay, that's interesting. Then he says, as an example of herd hypnotism, German literature is so virulently allegorized... That's sort of like made into parables, that the German never knows whether he is a kangaroo, a Scythian, or his own sweet self. You, however, are a herdsman. That is surely parable enough. That's a pretty good opener.
Uh-huh.
Number two. I'll do number two since it's short, then you can do three. Number two. Do not admit cleverness. In any form into your life. Do not admit cleverness. That's what I was saying to you. That's why I'm reading. This is what I was saying to you, Sarah. You were being clever for Harold and missed out but your observations, right?
I suppose, yeah.
No, that's what you said. I shouldn't have babbled. I shouldn't have tried to tell him stuff. You wanted to show you were clever. So he says, do not admit cleverness in any form in your life. Observe the accomplishment of some people's signatures. It is the herd touch. What?
On the backs of giants.
The backs of what?
No, don't use metaphors. Parables. I said on the backs of giants.
Yeah. The signatures.
Is that code or is that a metaphor?
What you said?
Parable. Yes.
I don't know. Stop being clever. Just relax for a minute. Let's just get this said. So you do number three, KT.
Okay. Exploit stupidity. Introduce a flatness where it is required into your commerce. Dull your eye as you affix it on a dull face. That makes me laugh.
You know what? Hey, listen to this. That's one of the slogans of the Church of Subgenius. Act like a dumb shit and they'll treat you as an equal.
Oh, okay.
I always said Wyndham Lewis was the first subgenius. That's what he's saying here. Dull your eye. Go ahead.
Okay. Why do you think George Borrow used such idiotic cliches as the beams of the descending luminary? He was a great writer and he knew what he was doing. Mocked the herd perpetually with the grimace of its own garrulity or deadness. If it gets out of hand and stampedes toward you, leap onto the sea of mangy... This makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
Leap onto the sea of mangy facts until the sea is still. That is, cast your mask aside and spring above them. They cannot see or touch anything above them. They have never realized that their backs, or rather their tops, exist. They will think that you have vanished into heaven. That is really funny.
Yes, and then True Blood, the end of the latest season, the bad anti-vampire people were rounding up the vampires, and the main guy, Eric Northman or whatever he is, he escaped by going zoom straight up to the sky. You know what I mean? They had him surrounded, they had guns on him, and he just went like a missile. So he did what this guy recommended. What does he say? Cast your mask and spring above them.
Yeah.
So he did. He looked like he sprang. You watch True Blood? See him spring?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
Okay.
But I also leap onto the sea of mangy backs.
Jump off stage into the mosh pit.
Look, Wendy says she got to say she can't take anymore going elsewhere. What is Wendy? She's going, yay, Dr. Dean, our wonderful doctor. Well, I guess, what the hell has that got to do with it? I can't even remember. I just said that. That's right, Remag. Right, right. That's good. Yeah, you're right, Wendy. Yay, Dr. Dean, you're one of, we love her so much. Then she's got to say, you can't take any more going. Well, where the hell are you going, Wendy? We're just getting good. I do not tolerate people leaving. I do not tolerate fatigue. You should stay with this, no matter what. Look at Katie.
Stay I'm up going all night. Night. I am.
Okay, wait.
I'm going to get ready to make some coffee here in a little while.
Good.
It'll be delicious.
All right, so read number four.
Okay, number four. As to language, eschew all cliches implying a herd personality. Never allow such terms as top-hole, priceless, or doggo to pass your lips. Go to the dictionary if you want an epithet. If you feel eloquent, use that moment to produce a cliche of your own. Cherish your personal vocabulary, however small it is. Use your own epithet as though it were used by a whole nation, if people would have no good reason for otherwise accepting it. Then he gives examples of personal epithets. That man is abysmal. That is an abysmal book. It was prestigious. Here comes that sinister bird. He's a sinister card. He has a great deal of sperm. That was spoken about you, Bob.
Yes.
I like a fellow with as much sperm as that.
And this is being published in, Edwardian England in 1913.
Yes. Yeah, he was very much a modernist.
Yeah. Well, he started it. He started it.
Right. Yeah, he did. And he was a better painter than he was a writer.
He was good at both. But, you have your taste. I don't have likes or dislikes. I study his paintings. They're worth studying.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so do you want to read?
Yeah, no, there's more.
Or do I read on? I got to read that, too. Borrow from all sides, mannerisms, or callings, or classes to enrich your personal bastion of language. Borrow from the pulpit, from the clattering harangue of the auctioneer, lawyer's technicality, the pomposity of the politicians, borrow grunts from the fishermen, solecisms from the inhabitants. Solecisms?
Yeah.
From the inhabitants of Marionette. He is a prue. Ah, yes, a prue. You can say, ha, yes, a prue, as though it were one word, accent on the yes. Okay, now you're number five.
Number five. In accusing yourself, stick to the code of the mountain, but crime is alien to a herdsman's nature. Number six, yourself must be your caste. You must be your own caste. Seven, cherish and develop side by side your six most constant indications of different personality. There's hinting of quadrophenia. Your six most constant indications of different personalities. You will then acquire the potentiality of six men. Leave your front door one as B. The next march down the street as E. Okay, so leave your front door one day as one person. Then march down the street as the next person. A variety of clothes, hats especially, are of help in this wider dramatization of yourself. Never fall into the vulgarity of being or assuming yourself to be one ego. Each trench must have another one behind it. Each single self that you manage to be at any given time must have five at least indifferent to it. You must have a power. Now, isn't it interesting? I went through the first time my 10 holy offices and tetrated on them and how I shifted from one to the next. And now I'm reading this. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Totally relates to that. So I've developed it beyond what he's saying. Each single self that you manage to be at any given time must have five at least indifferent to it. You must have a power of indifference of 5 to 1. All the greatest actions in the world have been 5 parts out of 6 impersonal in the impulse of their origin. To follow this principle, you need only cultivate your memory. You will avoid being the blind man of any moment. B, your first guy, will see what is hidden to D. See, there it is.
Parallel.
That's actually
process.
Implying a tetrad, for fuck's sake.
Parallel
D will
process.
See what is hidden to D. Who were Turgenev, 6 unknown? Himself. Turgenev, playwright or something. 8, never lie. You cannot be too fastidious about the truth. If you must lie, at least see that you lie so badly that it would not deceive a peahen. The world is, however, full of peahens. Yeah, you do the next.
Okay. 9, spend some of your spare time every day in hunting your weaknesses. Caught commerce with the herd as methodically, solemnly, and vindictively as a monkey his fleas. You will find yourself swarming with them while you are surrounded by humanity, but you must not bring them up on the mountain. If you can get another man to assist you, one that is honest enough not to pass his own on to you, that is a good arrangement. Now that's a good imagery, sitting there thinking of yourself swarming with weaknesses. Okay, number 10. Do not play with political notions. Aristocratisms or the revere, for that is a compromise.
No, the reverse. Not the revere, the reverse.
Oh, the reverse. Okay, I can barely see with my bifocals. Let me see if I can take them off. Oh, that's much better. For that is a compromise with the herd. Do not allow yourself to imagine a fine herd, though still a herd. There is no fine herd. The cattle that call themselves gentlemen, you will observe to be a little cleaner. It is merely cunning and produced with a product called soap. But you will find no serious difference between them and those vast, dismal herds they avoid. Some of them are very dangerous and treacherous. Be on your guard with the small herd of gentlemen.
So that's another synchronicity. We were talking about soap and cleaning earlier, and that really fits that.
I don't understand this at all, and it's freaking me out. Like, since I was very, very young, I have obsessively, anywhere I could, graffitied rotary, like a telephone, and then wrote the word soap underneath it. I don't understand this. Like, what is...
Well, you grew up in middle America where soap is an important product. We may not be putting any significance on Lewis here. I actually use soap every day, and so should I identify with this? But you did write soap. Well, very good. What would you want to say about that?
Nothing.
Well, I had three synchronicities. You got one. So I'm not cracking up because I brought up Quadrophenia today, and then he does it here in what we're reading. I'm relaxing about it. Relax there, Gummo. Take another whiff of your RNA drops.
Yeah.
Okay, so number 11. Whose turn to speak next? Me?
It's your turn. Yep, your turn to do 11.
All right. You will meet with this pitfall. And here is what the pitfall is. At moments, surrounded by the multitude of unsatisfactory replicas, it's like after images, you will grow confused by a similarity bringing them so near to you. You will reason where, from some point of view, the difference is so slight, whether that delicate margin is of the immense importance that we hold it to be. The only thing of importance, in fact. That group of men talking by the fire in your club, you will still remain a member of your club. You still hang out. That party at the theater looked good enough, you will say. Their skins are fresh. They are well made. Their manners are good. You must then consider what they really are. On closer inspection, you know from unpleasant experience that they are nothing but limitations and vulgarities of the most irritating description. The devil nature has painted these sepulchres pink and covered them with a blasphemous Bond Street distinction. Matter that has not sufficient mind to permeate it, grows. As you know, am I reading that right? Permeated grows. Matter that has not sufficient mind to permeate it grows, as you know, gangrenous and rotten. Animal high spirits, a little but easily exhausted. Goodness is all that they can claim. Animal high spirits, a little but easily exhausted. Goodness is all they can claim. What seduced you from your severity for a moment was the same thing as a dull woman's good looks. This is probably what you will have in front of you. On the other hand, everywhere you will find a few people who, although not a mountain people, are not heard. They may be herdsmen gone mad through contact with the herd and strayed, or through inadequate energy for our task, they may be found there. Or they may be a hybrid, or they may even be herdsmen temporarily bored with the mountain. I have a pipe below myself sometimes. As a subgenius, that's the big symbol that your subgenius is the pipe, he has got the pipe right in there.
Well,
how's that?
Yeah.
You wrote the word pipe everywhere?
No, I'm going to get Beethoven's snuff. His little snuff. Yeah.
Okay. I have a pipe below myself.
Those.
You what?
Start collecting my role models. Little snuff.
Okay.
Models.
They are new, those are your elders. There are numerous other denominations. Treat them as bothers. No, excuse me. Treat them as brothers. Employ them as opportunity offers, as auxiliaries in your duties. Their society and help will render your task less arduous. Your turn.
12. As to women, wherever you can, substitute the society of men. Treat them kindly, for they suffer from the herd, although of it, and have many of the same contempts as yourself. They are a sort of bastard mountain people. There must be somewhere a female mountain, a sort of mirage mountain. I should like to visit it, but women and the processes for which they exist are the arch-conjuring trick, and they have the cheap mystery and a good deal of slipperiness of the conjurer. Sodomy should be avoided as far as possible. It tends to add to the abominable confusion already existing. So what if he's talking about sodomy with men?
No.
Yes, I guess that's what applies to. Not
so if
sure.
He's talking about women, like women and then also having sex with men.
Yeah, he's saying don't run into the arms of men in your reaction to
no,
women.
No, because, well, at that period in time, too, I don't think women knew that they had two different holes, but men knew that, and so then they could be like, I love you, I love you, I might put a baby in you, and the woman would be like, well, if he does, then we're married. You know, it's...
Yeah.
The girls know now, but it should be avoided now, too.
Yeah, that's interesting that he sees the effect. Marshall writes that in Mechanical Bride. Talks about the Mechanical Bride leads to the men being pissed off and...
Yep.
Yeah. No, Lewis got there first.
Yep. Okay, do you want to do 13? Or you want me to do 13?
You do 13. My voice is a little dry.
Okay. Wherever you meet a shyness that comes out of solitude, although all solitude is not anti-herd, naiveness and a patent absence of contamination, the sweetness of mountain water, any other signs of goodness, you must treat that as sacred, as portions of the mountain. However much you suffer for it, you must defend and exalt it. On the other hand, every child is not simple, and every woman is not weak. In many cases, to champion a female would be like springing to the rescue of a rhinoceros when you notice that it had been attacked by a flea. Chivalrous manners, again, with many women are like tiptoeing into a shed where an ox is sleeping. Some children, too, rival in nastiness their parents. But you have your orders in this matter. Indifference where there should be nothing but the whole eagerness or compunction of your being is the worst crime in the mountain's eyes.
Indifference where there should be nothing but the whole eagerness or compunction of your being is the worst crime. So indifference, see? Engage. Pay attention. Look around. Observe with humility. Do not expose your cleverness. So he's saying much of the Dobbesian dogma. And there was another thing in here. Yes, in the tiny note chart. Now, this is not going to freak me out, Gummo, but in the tiny note chart, the symbol assigned to me is the mountain. And this is all about the mountain.
Yep. You know, I think in reading this, too, this is why I didn't, enjoy Tar. I mean, I appreciate it, and I appreciate it for being modern and whatnot, but I didn't... he's got, weird feelings about women. Like, the way the women were treated in that novel, all of them, no matter what.
Let me say this. There was a debate in the conference in London on Wyndham Lewis together a couple of years ago. And this women thing came up, and Alan Mutton explained to the feminist attitude that Lewis, he was the only movement allowed women in his art movement. So he recognized and did not suppress the women around London who had the ability to be artists. So let's remember that he was way more fair than Marinetti and the Futurists and some of these other movements.
Sure.
Just put that on the record.
Yeah.
But he was a weird guy. He wasn't going to let any social rules, interfere with his path to joy.
Right. Well, and it was...
One thing, I talked to some of... When I talked to Al Mountain and some of these Lewis scholars, they say some of these stories that I've said aren't true, have been found not true. I mean, it's not certain that, a woman came with the baby and that. It is in one of the biographies. I like to say it because it's such a dramatic story, but it may not be true.
Right. Well, the other thing, too, is at this time, in that Madame Curie movie that I watched a couple weeks ago, her husband didn't think that the life of a scientist could include the love of a woman. Like, you couldn't be in love and be a scientist. and a lot of the conversations that the Bohemians are having in Tar are about that. Like, who do you have sex with versus who do you love versus, how do you reconcile all that? So it's probably just cultural at the time. I shouldn't let it...
What do you find uninteresting about that?
Well, I mean, it's just, he just seems kind of marginalizing toward women as being evish in their ability to distract in a really,
He's always trying to go. He's allowing the possibility,
which is not happening around here. And also, really, in his defense, name three famous women artists that really contributed to just American art history.
I don't know that much about art, period. I mean,
there were women only around.
There's not really. I mean, I just said it because there's not really, and that's my point. I don't think that he's being an asshole. I think he's being absolutely right in saying,
What? Didn't finish the sentence.
Making provisions, but also, never mind. I don't.
He's making neat ideas. Women are this or that, and suffragette movement is happening right then. And he's being not go along with the herd moods, the herd trends or fads. So he's making these interesting statements about women. He's not anti-women, I don't think. He's being world of ideas. He's trying to make you. He's like trying to come up with different ways to shake up your dullness.
I see that. I do. And that's another thing too. That's interesting. So many of these ideas are so modern that I think I'm expecting him to be a little bit further along with the views on the female, because the rest of it is so current. But it wasn't at the time.
Yeah.
Which all the girls are going through in Downton Abbey, too. I mean, not to bring that up again, but all those girls are changing roles with the changing time.
Yeah.
All the daughters.
Yeah, what did you think the last scene in episode 8? She, Mary's walking off with the two suitors, and the father says, this is an interesting menage that's happened since I've been away. And then they show the three women lean forward to watch her walk away with the two men. That's an interesting shot, and that's how it ended. What did you think of that?
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
the herd, the three women, they were fascinated by something.
Well, who was she going to pick?
Or was she going to hang out with both of them? Now, the aristocrats of that period in the Bloomsbury group, they started, like, sharing women and men, you know? So it'll be interesting if she starts, having affairs with them, not making a decision. That's a good prediction.
They're wondering what her dress is going to look like when she marries one of them.
They were, like, drawn like animal in a herd. What the hell?
Yeah.
It actually showed the herd mentality in a way. You know what I mean? The animal nature of human beings. It's actually quite well done, that last image. Certainly never expected it would end with that, right?
No, right.
Okay, so you... you did one.
So I'm over that he's doesn't like women. I'm over it. Thank you.
He may not like women, but this just used the words and ideas. I find it the way he's describing women, that's interesting, in the old chemical body layout, their way of seduction. He's also describing the war of the sexes. There is this suspicion of each other just because they're different forms.
Right.
You know? I found, you go hang out with a bunch of intelligent women, they notice you're a man. They can't ignore it. Just as if a bunch of men around and a woman comes in, they notice it. The form hypnotizes people. It's like he's trying to show raw perceptual hypnotism.
Right. Got it. No, that's brilliant.
Yeah, he's showing how you're seduced by what you think you see.
Right.
I would suggest reading Bukowski for the understanding that he put women on a pedestal, but only those that deserve to be exalted, and that's also an idealistic, unattainable thing.
Yeah, so Bykowski was an early or a modern version of the outside, the enemy. He picked up on the Lewis tradition. He may not have been aware of Lewis, but he acted out that what some people might think Lewis was doing. Yeah, you know, when I had very interesting phone conversations with him, but I wouldn't. Well, I'm not going to go into that now. But yes, he was very raw, very raw. We've done 13, right? That's it. Children
right.
rival in nastiness their parents. Good reminder.
Right.
Number 14. Conquests have usually been divided from their antitheses, and defeats from conquests by some casual event. Had Moscow not possessed a governor ready to burn the Kremlin and the hundreds of palaces accumulated there, peace would have been signed by the Tsar at Bonaparte's entrance. Had the Lascans persevered for 10 days against Cortez, the Aztecs would never have been troubled. Yet Montezuma was right to remain inactive, paralyzed by prophecy. Napoleon was right when he felt that his star was at last a useless one. He had drained it of all of its astonishing effulgence. The hair's breadth is only the virtuosity of fate, guiding you along imaginary precipice, and all the detail is make-believe anyway. Watch your star soberly and without comment. Do not trouble about the pasteboard cliffs. Boy, he really gets metaphorical in that one.
He does. He does.
All right, number 15. There are very stringent regulations about the herd keeping off the sides of the mountain. In fact, your chief function is to prevent their encroaching. Some, in moments of boredom or vindictiveness, are apt to make rushes for the higher regions. Their instinct, fortunately, always keeps them in crowds or bands, and their trespassing is soon noticed. Those traps and numerous devices you have seen on the edge of the plain are for use, of course, in the last resort. Do not apply them prematurely. Not very many herdsmen lose their lives in dealing with the herds. So you can read the next couple or so. We'll split number 18.
Okay. So 16, contradict yourself in order to live. You must remain broken up.
Wait a minute. Contradict yourself. End of point. Then, in order to live, you must remain broken up. Like he would say, he believed
brilliant.
In two-ness. Yeah, and he believed in two-ness, not oneness. And we've heard Ion talk a lot about duality. So he was on pretty good with that.
Yeah.
Not, you know, anti-duality, but the actual fact there's two of you at least.
Right. That's why my diagram that has the King James Version and Finnegan's Wake in this, like, second line
right.
or something. Okay, that's why... Okay. All right. I lost it. Never mind.
But you're thinking too many
not
thoughts.
I might have, I guess. No.
You start to say a thought, and then you lose it. Take a drink. Eat a peanut butter sandwich.
Rest in pieces. It's
yeah,
best
yeah.
to rest in pieces, R.I.P.
Well, I don't identify with any idea. I'll rest in peace for a minute or two, and then I'll go to unity. Okay, so you want to read 17, then we'll split 18.
Sure. 17, the teacher does not have to be, although he has to know. He is the mind imagining, not the
executive.
Executant. The
yeah,
what?
Executive. He's not the executive.
Executive.
He's not executing.
Okay. He is the mind imagining, not the executant. I can't even say that word. Executant.
Executant. Executive.
Executant. Executant. The executant, the young, svelte, miraculous athlete, the strapping virtuoso, really has to give the illusion of perfection. Do not expect me to keep in sufficiently good training to perform the feats I recommend. I usually remain up on the mountain.
So he's like,
also very funny.
Yes, and he's not getting too involved in helping people.
Right.
Blair.
What'd you say, Gummo?
I thought it was Hilaire, Toad's Hilaire.
Right. Now, you posted this months ago, didn't you, Sarah? Didn't you find this and do something with it? Somebody did. Wow, way back. Have you seen this before?
Oh, I posted it. I posted it on your wall.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I said I wanted to talk about it.
Did you listen to that guy? It was like a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Did you listen to that guy with a very harsh voice talk about Lewis? You posted the tape, or somebody did. Did Joseph Bowden or some guy in London lecturing on Lewis? Did you listen to all that?
Yes. No, I couldn't. He talked about this a little bit. I couldn't hear it through his English accent, but I only listened to maybe half of it, and then I couldn't listen to it.
Really? You couldn't make it out?
Yeah. Sometimes I don't do well with a British accent.
Okay, so we're...
And it was poor quality, too. He was screaming.
Yeah, yeah. I said that Jay or Ion has that. Yeah, it's very ionic in a way, this attitude he's got here.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's doing the four phases, part fascist, part communist, and monarchist. What was that? A monarchist in my Marxism and a healthy streak of order in my healthy passion for order in my anarchism. Those four levels, the interactions are shown here. So he then says, number 18, above all this, let's see, above all this sad commerce with the herd, let something veritably remain a pouce sur la montagne. That's in quotes, French. Now, this is the last item, so it's 18 items. Always come down with mask and thick clothing to the valley where we work. Stagnant gases from these Yahoo-esque and rotten herds are more dangerous often than the wandering cylinders that emit them. See, you are not caught in them without your mask. But once returned to our adorable height, forget your sallow task. With great freedom, indulge your love. The terrible processions beneath are not of our making and are without our pity. Our sacred hill is a volcanic heaven, but the result of its violence is peace. The unfortunate surge below even, what's this? The unfortunate surge below even has moments of peace. Very Emerald Tablet there. Emerald Tablet,
yep.
Talk.
Well, I don't. What does Yahoo-esque mean, too? What does that mean? I did Google that word to see if anything came up.
In Gulliver's Travels, the horse people, I think, are called Yahoos. One of the people. Yeah, well, you know,
okay.
One of the stupid peoples that the traveler encounters are the Yahoos, I think.
Okay.
See, it's funny that didn't come up as a point. Should come up. Yahoo, maybe I'll put in. Swift.
Well, of course, that's Yahoo Mail, which I'm sure it has nothing to do with that. But
yeah, Yahoo is a legendary being in the novel Gulliver's Travels, which is 1726. Swift describes him as being filthy and with unpleasant habits.
Oh, okay.
The idle boss.
The what? The idle boss? What'd you say?
Mm-hmm.
What?
I don't know how to pronounce it, and I don't think I should.
Did you say idle boss?
I don't know how. Yeah, I think.
Well, spell it. Well, I'll pronounce it.
I would have to Google it first.
Jesus. Look at this. All the things we've been reading, and I've been discussing Alan Munton every now and then. At the bottom... Text re-edited in 1977 by Alan Munton. He's the guy who did this. You see how I am 2 degrees from everybody and everything?
Yep. I see that.
Here I'm quoting him, talking about him. I didn't even notice that he's the one Well, nobody cared about Lewis, you could say, in the 70s. And he is a Lewis scholar in the minority. He went and found this thing and fixed it up or whatever, you know?
I like it. I like the Code of the Herdsman.
Yeah. Not simple.
Nope.
Look, it has a picture of Lewis, and underneath the quote from McLuhan. Lewis was an avant-garde all by himself, the greatest pictorial draftsman of his time, the most controversial prose stylist of our day. Pretty good stuff for someone that nobody's allowed to talk about.